Es geht weiter mit dem Thema Zensur. Diesmal ein Vortrag von Lucy Morion von Reporter ohne Grenzen, die uns erklären wird, welche die wirklichen Feinde des Internets weltweit sind. Herzlich willkommen.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. Thank you for being here today. I'm the head of Reporters Without Borders' new media desk. You probably wonder exactly what's the link with online free speech, because traditionally Reporters Without Borders defends press freedom and journalists. But for years, we've been involved in this fight for free speech online, because it's part of the right to inform and to be informed. Because in many countries where the traditional media are under the control of the regime, online reporters and bloggers are the ones who cover stories of interest for their people. They are the ones who can hold those in power accountable. They are the ones who have become the new heralds of free speech. Today I'm going to give you some general trend of the internet censorship worldwide, some information about the Internet Enemies report that Reporters Without Borders published last month, and then I'm going to open the floor for Q&A with the audience. So the fight for free access to information is being played out to an ever greater extent on the internet. The emerging general trend is that a growing number of countries are attempting to tighten their control of the net, but at the same time, creative, resourceful netizens are fighting back and demonstrate mutual solidarity by mobilizing when necessary. In many authoritarian countries, the internet offers a unique space for discussion and information sharing, and it has become an ever more important engine for protest and mobilization. The internet allows repressed civil societies to revive and develop. The new media, especially social networks, have given populations collaborative tools with which they can change, or at least challenge, the social order. Young people have taken them by storm. Facebook, for instance, has become the rallying point of the activists who are prevented from demonstrating in the streets. We've seen it in Egypt, where the emergency laws forbid people to demonstrate in the streets, but bloggers have been able to mobilize, especially every April 6th every year, to ask for more freedom, to protest against the cost of life, or just to criticize the government. In Iran, we've seen how Facebook and Twitter have helped the protesters spread their message out. One single video on YouTube can help to expose government abuses to the entire world. You've probably seen or at least heard of this video, this young woman, Neda, who died in front of a camera and whose video was sent over the world. Neda has become a rallying point for the critique of the regime, and this video has made really shockwaves around the world. In Burma as well, during the last Saffron Revolution, we were able to see live the repression against the monks. This was completely different from what happened in 1988, when we had very few pictures of a bloodbath, and it actually came to us sometimes several weeks after the events. So we were informed of this repression way later. This time we were feeling like we were actually with them, witnessing the events. In Cuba, we can see that just one USB flash drive can be all it takes to disseminate news. They are being passed from hands to hands with articles from dissidents who are not able to publish in their country. But internet censorship is just not only a question of human rights. It also deals with economic interest. In some countries, like in Turkmenistan, it is companies that have obtained better access to the internet and to the new media, sometimes with positive consequences for the rest of the population. And as a barrier to trade, web censorship should be included on the next agenda of the World Trade Organization meetings, because it does have consequences for financial transaction, investment, transparency. Several of the WTO's members, including China and Vietnam, should be required to open their internet networks, or be sanctioned. I mean, they have made promises when they joined the WTO to open up their media market, and we can see that these promises have not been kept at all. Well, times have changed since the internet and the new media were in some countries the exclusive province of certain dissidents and opponents. And the leaders of those countries had first been taken aback by a proliferation of new technologies that a younger generation was mastering pretty well. And they have been also taken aback by this new form of public debate. Dictators has, you know, suddenly to cope not only with colored revolution, but with Twitter revolutions. The vast potential of cyberspace can no longer be reserved for dissenting voices, and repressive governments acted on their threats. They have censored political and social content with the latest technological tools. They have arrested and harassed netizens, bloggers. They have used omnipresent surveillance and ID registration in order to compromise users' anonymity. And they have fought back spreading their propaganda on the web. In 2009, some 60 countries experienced a form of web censorship, which is twice as many in 2008. We can see that the World Wide Web is being progressively devoured by the implementation of national intranets whose content is approved by the authorities. Usenet, Chinternet, Turkmennet, it does not matter to this government if more and more internet users are going to become victim of the sort of digital segregation. It does not matter to them if the very nature of the internet, as we know it, is being altered. What we're seeing now is Web 2.0 colliding with Control 2.0. Very few rare countries, such as North Korea and Burma, can afford to completely cut themselves from the World Wide Web, either permanently or temporarily, in case of internal troubles. We've seen it in Burma during the trial of Aung San Suu Kyi. The internet connection were actually suspended in the city where the trial was taking place because the authorities wanted to prevent pictures, information from getting out. In these countries, the lack of infrastructure is a main issue also to access the internet, and the governments are not acting on this because it's sort of going in the right direction for them. The telecom black market is prospering in countries like Cuba, for instance, where access ID and passwords are sold for a few dollars to people who want to have access to the web and who are required to use those passwords and IDs rather at night. The black market is also thriving at the border between China and North Korea, where people can use phones to connect to the outside world. I don't know if you heard about that, but a man was executed last January in North Korea. What was his crime? The poor man just dared using a Chinese cell phone he was able to get at the border. He called a friend, a defector, who is now in South Korea, and they talked about the cost of life. He gave him some information about the price of rice, and that's what got him into trouble. He was executed. Netizens are being targeted at a growing rate. For the first time since the creation of the internet, a record number of close to 120 bloggers, internet users, and cyber dissidents are behind bars for having expressed themselves freely online. And the world's largest prison for netizens is China, which is far out ahead of other countries with about 72 detainees, followed by Vietnam, 17 detainees, and then Iran, about 10 detainees. These two countries, Vietnam and Iran, have, as you know, launched waves of netizen arrests in recent months. In China, Liu Xiaobo, this intellectual who has been promoting the Charter 08, this text asking for more democracy and freedom in China, was sentenced to 11 years in jail, and the sentence was given on Christmas Day last year. In Vietnam, we've seen some pretty harsh sentences as well given to bloggers, Democrat activists who have been calling just for more freedom. Some of them were sentenced to 7 years in jail, and one of them was actually sentenced to 16 years in jail because he refused to apologize to the judges. apart from the usual suspects, some other countries have been arresting netizens in the last few months, even though it's not clear whether or not they are, these countries are actually elaborating a net control or repression strategy. In Morocco, two bloggers and a cyber cafe owner were actually arrested. They were arrested by local authorities who were trying to cover up a local demonstration and whose repression turned out really bad. In Azerbaijan, we have two bloggers, Adnan Hadijezad and Emin Mili, who are currently in jail. They exposed the corruption of certain officials and they also made fun of them on a video that was widely circulated on YouTube, and it looks like the regime didn't really have the same sense of humor. More and more states are also enacting or considering repressive laws pertaining to the web, and the Western democracies are actually not immune from this tendency for more internet regulation. They do it in the name of the fight for, in the fight against child pornography or against the theft of intellectual property. We're seeing it, for instance, in Australia, but also in France, Italy, Spain, Great Britain. Of course, we're not against blocking of some pedophile websites, but the problem with this tendency is that we have to be very careful about how it's done. A few websites dealing with pedopornography being blocked with a court decision in a state where the rule of law is being respected is fine, but if you start setting up filtering systems that are likely to cause overblocking and who are not being overseen by a judicial order, then there's real cause for concern, and I think we should really stay very vigilant about what our democratic countries are doing. On a global scale, the ACTA, A-C-T-A treaty, which is supposed to fight counterfeiting, is being negotiated behind closed doors without consultation of NGOs, civil societies, and we are pretty worried about what can happen, because it could possibly introduce some liberticidal measures which could lead to more surveillance or more filtering of the web. It's pretty unclear, because we've seen just a few leaks on the internet, by the way, about what was happening, but now there's some efforts at the European level to get the European Parliament involved and get more information about what exactly is going on. Some Scandinavian countries are actually taking a different direction. In Finland, an order was adopted stating that internet access is a fundamental right for all citizens. So that's an interesting take. The Iceland's parliament is currently examining a bill named the Icelandic Modern Media Initiative, IMMI, which is aimed at strictly protecting freedoms on the internet by guaranteeing the transparency and independence of information. What they want to do is basically to take the best laws protecting press freedom and online free speech around the world and apply them on their territory. So we'll have to see how this goes if it's adopted, but Iceland could very well become a sort of cyber paradise for bloggers and citizen journalists. Now, we were talking before about, you know, netizens against repressive authorities, and the outcome of this cyber war between those two parties will basically depend upon the effectiveness of the weapons that each camp has available. We see on one hand powerful filtering and surveillance systems, and on the other hand, more sophisticated proxies, censorship circumvention tools, such as Tor, VPN, Siphon, UltraReach. These tools are developed mainly thanks to the solidarity of netizens and volunteer developers around the world. We know that thousands of Iranians today use some proxies that were originally intended for Chinese users. UltraReach, UltraSurf, Frigate are pretty popular, and they should get more help, more resources from the international community to continue this crucial thing. Global pressure makes a difference too. The major world powers' geostrategic interests are finding a communications platform on the web. In January 2010, the US made freedom of expression on the internet a cornerstone of their foreign policy. It remains to see exactly how the country will apply this strategy and what the reaction of other countries will be. What we notice compared to journalists who work for mainstream media is that web users, dissidents, and bloggers can be pretty vulnerable because they are not related to one big outlets. But we can see that they are starting to organize collectively or individually, depending on what causes they wish to defend. We have seen more associations, bloggers associations, being created in Russia, in Morocco. We've seen Belarus users, Belarus web users group launching campaigns to protest against some government's decisions. A very interesting one was when the government decided to stop allowing elderly people to take the buses and transportation for free. And some bloggers decided that was a really bad decision, so they asked people, like regular people, to give some of their transportation coins to these older people. And they did it. I mean, some of them did it. And these bloggers also film it, and they post it online just to challenge what the government was doing here. We've also seen Chinese internet users organizing cyber movements on behalf of Iranian demonstrators. You have all heard about the hashtag CN for China, CN for Iran, sorry, China for Iran. So whether their causes are national or global, the messages that bloggers and netizens communicate are the ones that will decide of tomorrow's internet. We can still feel like, you know, a sort of resistance is being organized on the web against this tendency for more control, more repression, more propaganda. Now, I'm just going to say a few words about the list of the enemies of the internet that Reporters Without Borders put out last month. Sorry. So every year we publish a list of countries that are supposed to be the worst violators of freedom of expression on the net. This year again, the 12 worst violators were Saudi Arabia, Burma, China, North Korea, Cuba, Egypt, Iran, Uzbekistan, Syria, Tunisia, Turkmenistan, and Vietnam. Some of these countries are determined to use any means necessary to prevent their citizens from having access to the web. Burma, North Korea, of course, Cuba, Turkmenistan. These are countries where financial, technical obstacles are coupled with harsh crackdowns on the existence of a very limited intranet. Internet shutdowns or slowdowns are pretty common, especially in periods of unrest. And the internet's potential as a portal open to the world directly contradicts the propensity of these regimes to isolate themselves from other countries. Saudi Arabia, Uzbekistan, for instance, have opted for such massive filtering that their internet users have chosen very often to practice self-censorship. And it's something that is hard to measure exactly. For economic purposes, China, Tunisia, Egypt, Vietnam have wagered on infrastructure development strategy, but at the same time, keeping a tight control over the web's political and social content. The Chinese and Tunisian filtering system, for instance, are becoming increasingly sophisticated. And these countries are also demonstrating a deep intolerance for critical opinions, even if they pretend that they are not censoring political content on the internet. Iran, I mean, I think it's something that you know pretty well, but the serious domestic crisis that Iran has been experiencing for months has caught netizens and the new media in its net, and they have become now enemies of the regime. Among the countries that are under surveillance, because we have this list of enemies of the internet, and we have a list of countries under surveillance that do, their behavior basically raises some concerns about net freedom. It may be not that worrying right now, but in the future it can be a real problem. So among these countries under surveillance are several democracies. Australia, because of the government's plan to introduce this highly developed internet filtering system, and also South Korea, where we have draconian laws creating too many specific restrictions on web users and challenging anonymity on the web. We have added two countries this year to this list, Turkey and Russia. Why? In Russia, aside from the control exercised by the Kremlin on most of the media outlets, the internet has become basically the freest space for sharing information, for denouncing corruption, and Russian bloggers use that pretty well. But the independence of the web is being jeopardized by some bloggers' arrests, prosecutions, as well as by blocking of some websites that are deemed extremist, but also we've seen Kasparov's website being blocked for a little while. And what we are seeing is also the regime's propaganda being increasingly present on the web. We have bloggers who are infiltrating discussion forums, bullying the Kremlin's critics. It's not sure yet whether this is the beginning of a real strategy of internet control, but at least there's a real risk that the internet can be transformed into a tool for political control. So we wanted to draw the attention on this issue. In Turkey, taboo topics mainly deal with Atatürk, founder of the Republic, the army, issues concerning minorities, and notably Kurds and Armenians. The dignity of the nation is also a big taboo. So these excuses basically have been used to justify blocking several thousands of websites, including YouTube, which has been triggering a lot of protests by Turkish bloggers and also by some international organization. And bloggers and netizens who express themselves freely on such topics also face judicial reprisals. We see pretty often online journalists being prosecuted for attempting the dignity of the nation, for terrorism, and so on. So it's something that we see pretty often. In this list under surveillance, we have other countries such as the United Arab Emirates, Belarus, and Thailand that should actually need to make some effort, some progress, because they may very well next year being transferred into the enemies of the internet list itself. Thailand because of the abuses of the lese majesté crimes, the Emirates because they have bolstered the number of websites blocked, and Belarus because the president has just signed a liberticidal order that will regulate the net, and that is coming to force this summer, just a few months before the election. So this list of enemies of the internet and countries under surveillance will probably change next year. The trend is probably that there should be more addition than countries taken off the list. But at the same time, the examples of internet users' actions, online campaigns for the general interest could also be more numerous. And each of us can be today the one who can mobilize other internet users for important causes, the environment, free speech, women's or children's rights. That's why it's really crucial to fight today for internet to remain what it was meant to be, a free space for sharing and exchange, not a tool of repression at the hands of repressive or manipulating powers. And this fight is being played out right now. So I think I'm going to stop here to let you some time to ask questions. I think there are some microphones over there. I don't see very well. But if you want to ask some questions, please go ahead. I'll be happy to answer. I think we have very few time left, but yeah.
Can hear me, right? Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
What are some of the methods that reporters, if they are like in one of the oppressed nations, like the ones you named, what are some of the ways they can try to get the news out right now? Like, what are the tools of the trade for people like that right now?
You mean people like bloggers in repressive countries or us here in our democratic countries? Well, I mean, first of all, what is important is that more and more people in those repressive countries know about censorship, even if it's being denied by the government. So they are being more curious about how to get around censorship, how to use VPN proxies, and even if proxy servers are blocked in their countries, sometimes it's being copied on DVDs and passed from one hand to another. It's on USB flash drive and so on. So I guess there's more awareness about how themselves to get around censorship. Now you have other tools, like in Cuba, for instance, online journalists and bloggers, they cannot have access to their blogs. Their blogs are hosted abroad. So what they do is they basically prepare the articles before and they put it on USB key drives, and they can go now to some of the tourist hotels. So they're going to go online because it's really expensive. It's $6 to $7 an hour when the monthly salary is about $20. So they just go online, they send an email with all the information, and their friends abroad will be the ones posting the information. But then they cannot, you know, moderate the comments, which is a little bit tricky for all of them. But I guess what we try to do is not only to monitor violations of online free speech, but also to help spread the word about these tools to get around censorship, and also to call upon all of us in our democratic countries where we do have access to a pretty open internet. There are some very useful tools like Tor. You can download it to your computer. It doesn't cost you a thing. And you become part of a network where computers abroad are being put at the disposal of people in repressive countries so they can get around the Great Firewall of China or other Great Firewalls.
In your example from Cuba, mm-hmm. would that circumvention that they use, is that legal in Cuba, or is that still something, if they get caught with that, they're pretty much putting themselves on the line every time?
Right. Well, I mean, the risks are really high. I think it's, you have, according to the law, you can get 5 years in jail just for connecting to the internet illegally, and 20 years for sending an article abroad that has not been vetted by the authorities. So in this case, it's pretty specific because they can have access to the World Wide Web in some internet, in some tourist hotels. So they would go there, send their email in, you know, a few minutes and then go. Or some of them also use the black market. I think you pay $50 a month to surf the web and $1 for sending one email. But then it's passwords and IDs that belong to people that are authorized to have access to the net, and they have to use it at night because these people are using it during the day. So it's quite some organization.
Vielen Dank.
Oh, okay.
Vielen Dank, Lucie Morion.
Thank you.
Applaus bitte.